This is the CMN Network, MI3. CMN Network, 220. CMN Network, MI3.
Newport County Amateur Radio Club is sponsoring the Cabin Fever Ham Fest on February 28th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, located at the Newport County Fairgrounds, 2581.
MI3 Network. CMN Network. This is the CMN Network.
This is KALIR listening.
I had one. It was an all-tube type rig.
and I never built the power supply to get it going, and I was going to do that, and I failed miserably. I just never got around to building the power supply. I have a, and I'm still going to build a nice power supply to do that. I've got a Tektronics, a power supply that I pulled, yanked out of an old Tektronics 541 oscilloscope. And that transformer, there was so many voltages that were available, or that were in those Tektronics oscilloscopes. They had negative supply rails, positive supply rails up the wazoo. I mean, all kinds of stuff there to power that oscilloscope. And I'm going to use that transformer and make a nice high voltage regulated power supply. And so I can do, and I've got a Drake. I have a couple of Drake R4 notes. Not R. I've got some Drake TR4s that I want to get up and running on HF.
Okay, yeah. I had a Latine transmitter for 6, and I had a converter, a national converter, and took it down to 7 megacycles with my S20R at the time, and I had a 5-element beam. I think the beam did most of the work.
Well, on a lot of those converters, they did not have the front-end sensitivity, and so, yes, putting a beam antenna up, that made up for the poor sensitivity of some of those converters. Was your converter, did that have the new Vister front end in it?
I'm not sure. The unit came out of one of the big national receivers, and the guy lived in town, and he said he wasn't going to be on, he never used it on 6, so he had it for sale, I bought it, and it was pretty sensitive, as far as I can remember, and I remember when 6 meters opened up. I worked a few stations down in Texas and Louisiana, and then it opened up again, and maybe I did some work with stations in Florida. So I love 6. It was fun when a band opened up.
Oh, I'm sure it was. Yeah, I actually had. I operated some CW on 6 meters down into like North Carolina and places like that. But it's just, I don't know, recent years it just hasn't really been open. And that's probably the wrong thing to say, because I think with the proper antennas and proper elevation and that sort of thing, 6 meters is probably always open. You know, a friend of mine taught me a very good lesson. He said, get a beam antenna, mount it so it's horizontal polarization, and get the thing up a ways on a tower. And he says, you'll always be able to talk to somebody. And he's talking about 6 meters and higher in frequency. So I learned that from him, and it's pretty cool what he does. And he's an engineer for one of the local TV stations here, And I've known him for years and years, but that guy is Mark Smith. And he said he can always reliably operate DX on the VHF frequencies. W8LIR, this is WB9YPA.
B9YCK or something. This is K8LIR. I've been around a long time. I also worked in a radio. I worked in radio, and I was a television engineer for about 40 years. And I was in South Bend about a month and a half ago for some medical checkup with a VA. So I was in your area, and the snow was just about gone then. And the snow was just about gone up here. And in between, we've got about 24 inches of snow.
Oh, my. Correction, yeah, K8LIR. Sorry about that. Now we got that straightened out. Yeah, Gil, you know how it is around here with the lake effect. Yeah, you just never know. And you've got sunshine, which is great. I'm happy for you. We don't, today is not overcast here. But fortunately, it did warm up. I don't know what the temperature is outside, but I'm sure it's above freezing. So our snow is actually melting, and I'm so happy to see it go away. It's kind of a nuisance. Did you know the late Russ Somerville, K8BYN, was his call sign?
No, I didn't. I go back a long ways. I worked mostly in Grand Rapids on two TV stations. Engineer, I did transmitter work, mostly studio work on tape machines and cameras.
Was that for WOOD-TV by any chance?
Yes, sir, it was. And I worked for WZZM-TV for about 10 years. And then I went over to Wood-TV and did a lot of production work, maintenance work, and retired from there 18 years ago.
That's pretty cool. It's a small world. Yeah, I made a circuit board and built this thing called a drop shadow adapter. A drop shadow delay line for WOOD-TV back in the 70s or maybe the 80s. I can't remember. And, I built that for them, and I wonder if they ever used it. Over.
I can't remember using anything like that. Even in our production area, I did maintenance in the production area on a lot of Sony machines. Worked on Sony cameras, and I don't remember any of that. One of our engineers, he screwed around with a lot of color stuff, like different colored fonts and whatever for a different project.
This device, all it did was it just added a drop shadow to the fonts. And, I was just curious if you ever saw that thing show up. Okay. Well, that's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, I never liked those Sony U-Matic machines, the three-quarter inch stuff. But I fell in love with the two-inch Ampex quad equipment. I love those. I thought those VR1200s and those machines, I thought those were pretty nice. At least I thought they were really cool.
I had those 1200s at channel 13 when I worked. And then when I switched over to channel 8, we had nothing but 2-inch RCA machines. And I spent time doing maintenance on those and optimizing a head about once a week.
The only RCA that I had experience on was it was kind of a, and that was at a TV station, channel 34, and that was back when it was in Elkhart down here, and that was a 2-inch RCA color, yeah, it did color, and that was on the PBS TV station here in Elkhart, and then they moved to South Bend years later after I went back to school. So I was working as an engineer for that station. But then I got a full-time job working for WNBU TV stations in South Bend. And then I was an engineer for them for like 6 years. And then I decided I wanted to move on because I got tired of being on call 24 hours a day. I said, "Man, I've had enough of this." So I quit and started writing machine language code for blood sugar glucometers. So I wrote firmware for those glucometers after I left the job at WNBU. But yeah, so that's what I did there. I originally, when I first got in the door, I switched brakes, and then they moved me into maintenance and found out that I could do some of that stuff. So and then I did transmitter maintenance. You know, you remember the Klystrons, that kind of stuff. So yeah, good old days. Of course, you worked for Channel 8, so they didn't have. Klystrons that they use for those lower TV frequencies.
Oh, yeah. I remember working on Channel 13's big transmitter. It had three, I can't remember the number of tubes. It had three big ones in the final. And, I worked on a problem where I had on a Saturday morning. I tried to catch up on my sleep. And the transmitter dumped. And the connections to one of the filaments on the transmitter, they burned right off. And the transmitter dumped. With a whole bunch of other relays that dumped. And, man, that woke me up. Kept me awake all afternoon fixing it. And by the time the nighttime engineer came on, I had it fixed. But I worked on transmitters. And I had a ham license way back when I was in high school at about 56, 57. I had my half novice license, hooked it up to a technician, and finally got my general, and this is where I've been. And I worked on RCA 1-inch machines, because those are user production, and a lot of Sony 3/4 inch, where I took the DVU-200s down to nothing and put them all back together with new parts. And, replace audio heads and scanners and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, the DVU-200, I went out to Sony school in San Jose about 3 different times for the different Sony machines that we bought at the station. And it's used basically for editing and for the news department with the attached tape machine to the camera. This is K8LR.
K8LIR, this is WB9YPA. Now they shipped me off to Sony school, a 2-week Sony course on those U-Matic machines, but I ended up going to New York. I went to New York and I got to know another ham that was going to the school there. And so we went and decided to take a trip. We took a little road trip from there to Connecticut, to Newington, and we wanted to see the W1EW headquarters. So we got lost that day.
Yeah, I had a good time out in California. Most of those were 2-week excursions. And had a chance to go through all the wineries and take some wine back home for the bosses when I got back. W9YPA, are you still around?
If you can copy, Gil, I'm going to stand by here for you and in case you're having some kind of a difficulty there. So I'll stand by here and wait for you, and I'll be monitoring. This is WB9YPA South Bend.
WB9YPA, this is a K8LIR back. How do you read?
Just a little bit of noise in the background on your signal, but I read just fine. And there's my telephone ringing. I'll get back to you in just a bit. WB9YPA. Okay, K8LIR. This is WB9YPA.
Okay, I got a copy on you now. I don't know, maybe my transmitter dropped out here. Maybe it got overheated. Because I'm not going in. I don't know how the SWR is going into my antenna here. The transmitter could have shut down.
Or maybe the All-Star Link, maybe I had a problem where you missed an entire transmission from me. So, yeah, that's very possible. I don't know if you missed the part where I was talking about where they sent me to the Sony, school on the 3/4 inch U-Matic machines up in New York City. They sent you to California, but they sent me to New York. And then later they sent me to Redwood City, California, on the Ampex ACR-25. That was a 2-inch quad cassette machine.
Yeah, Yeah, I got all of your stuff going to New York. Then I lost you after that. I probably got a mismatch on my antenna to the transmitter here. Anyhow, I don't know why I went to California. I didn't know they had a school out in New York. But anyhow, California was the main place. And I remember when Sony, they came out with a digital three-quarter inch machine. And that was something else on replacing the scanner on that machine. They really had to be precise for the digital work.
I thought you had to be precise, extremely precise on the analog stuff. So the digital stuff was worse, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was more touchy. It could take you about a half an hour to an hour to get the scanner just right. It had a track just right. So I didn't have too much trouble setting up the three-quarter inch. Those were, after a while they got to be fun and easy to work on, and a guy in the production area or on the air would give me a call and say, I got this problem, and I almost knew what the problem was before I even got to his station there to check the machine.
I remember, though, where some of that stuff they wanted you to bend, you had, you know, to work on those Sonys, you had to bend parts, you know, to get the right, you know, to get the right clearances and stuff like that, you know. And I'm like, I just, after working on the Ampex, you know, the Ampex quad stuff, I'm like, oh no, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. I think the Sony stuff got better years later, though, and they started using more durable, you know, tougher parts, you know, thicker parts and stuff like that. But that early stuff was, I thought it was pretty chintzy.
Yeah, I can remember that. But the thing is, we use it on the air for the time-based correctors, and surprisingly, the video looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it. I know. That's right. The time-based corrector covered all the sins. All the timing. The timing sins. Now the VR1200s didn't have time-based correction. There was a color tech that helped put the color, you know, back in time. But now the Ampex ACR25, that machine was so good that it really didn't even need a time-based corrector. But it did. But it came with one.
Yeah, I don't, I remember going through those machines and optimizing them about every Saturday, because I was on the weekend shift when I first started, because I was a newbie. And they showed me how to optimize the VR1200, but we had a 1000. I don't know if you remember the 1000. Ampex. We never turned it off because it had two racks of tubes, and if you turned it off and back on again, you might have lost about 12 tubes.
Yeah, they had a bunch. Oh my gosh, yeah, two racks of oh, that was, yeah. If that was a monochrome, yeah, that machine would record. We actually, I think we actually got away with playing color on the VR-1000. Now, I know that it would only record monochrome, but if I remember right, we were actually using it to play some color stuff on it.
It was a big black and white transport with two racks of tubes, and we never dared to turn it off. And they said, don't touch it, even though we're using a lot of electricity after we're off the air. That's when we used to sign off at midnight, and then come back on the air again around 4:30, 5 o'clock. Remember those days?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I used to sign off. I was the guy that secured the building at night, or in the morning, I should say. At 1:30, I think we would go off the air. Now, of course, it's 24 hours a day. I think I quit. I quit the station, I think, when it was right about the time they changed over to 24-hour format. But, yeah, I would sign off after, what was that show? It was called Tomorrow with Tom Snyder. And we signed off after the Tom Snyder show was over. And maybe it was 1:30 in the morning or something like that. We had the Tonight Show. That was over, I think, at maybe midnight. And then there was a couple shows after that, but I distinctly remember the Tom Snyder show. And then, then the crew would come in at, like, I think 5 o'clock in the morning, and I think it signed on at 5 a.m. So, I certainly remember those days. And the VR-1000 that we had. And then we got the VR-1200s, all solid-state, videotape recorders. And those machines were pretty dependable.
Yeah, the transports, I don't think they ever wore out, even on the 1200 and on the RCAs. I did have a lot of trouble doing maintenance on the 1-inch RCA machine. I think it was the first attempt on a helix-type machine that RCA had, and there was a little parts breaking down all the time, and they never sent me to school for it. It was on-the-job training.
Yep, I know. I was having a heck of a time with the Ampex initially. The Ampex ACR-25 had a lot of problems. And it was the demo machine that was on the NAB showroom that WNBU decided to purchase. So they bought that machine right off the showroom. And it had a lot of problems. You know, those carts jamming up and lamp failures and the buffer columns and that kind of stuff. And when they sent me to school, I came back with a handful of, I mean, like, all those field engineering bulletins. And I ordered all the parts, and about maybe after working on all that, doing all the suggestions and procedures in those field engineering bulletins, by golly, that machine ended up being very reliable, and it just worked.
Yeah. You gotta wait till, besides 0.001 machine. You got to get them up to the 120 or 130 production. By that time, they get all the bugs worked out. Oh, and did you ever work on that big RCA cart machine? We said I was dubbing commercials over onto those big 2-inch cassettes. You remember that? Did you have one of those? We had one of those at Channel 13 and at Channel 8 both.
I saw one of those operate at WSBT TV here in South Bend. They bought those, and we bought the Ampex. And those they had those fingers, you know, that would handle the tape, and it would pull the tape out. And I saw those. Those were a mechanical monster.
I worked on those too. And that goes back a long ways. That goes back to about 1972, 73.
Yep. Exactly. And, the Ampex was actually that machine was really, that was really something. That thing used buffer columns. Handle the tape with tightly controlled servo motors. And the motors were huge that operated those spools in the cassette. It had these cog belts that operated the spools in the cassette. And it had these little friction tables with these rubber, little turntables and the cassette would be pneumatically pushed toward those little turntables with the little rubber O-rings in them that contacted those spools. And the motors that operated those, that turned those cogs, those cog belts, that operated those turntables, those things were huge servo motors, you know, DC DC servo motors, and the electronics that controlled those motors.
CMN Network,
it had these buffer columns with these lamps and photo detectors. And that thing was amazing. When you hit the play button on that machine, the video was it was right there within milliseconds.
They had to have big motors on those things, because the torque to turn those little cassette cartridges, it took a lot of torque to turn those and get them up to speed for a commercial.
Yeah, yep, and they had those, yeah, exactly. And, let's see, and then the capstan, let's see, what did you, oh, that's right, there was no pinch roller. The capstan shaft was about, I would say maybe 2 inches diameter, and they used inside that capstan was like an air manifold or a vacuum, and there was all these little holes in that capstan shaft, and they applied a vacuum to that capstan, and that's what that operated the tape at 7.5 inches per second. Or was it 15 inches? I forgot what the NAB standard was for videotape. I thought it was, maybe it was dual speed, like audio.
I guess I'm mad. It's been a while. I'm trying to remember. Oh, then we had another type of machine. that Sony's, I think we had six Sony machines, and it would insert these Sony cartridges, cassettes, into this thing. I can't remember what that was called. I can't remember the name of that company that made that thing. That was a nightmare. There's stuff going wrong with that all the time. I think our station was a test lab for some of these companies that wanted to try different things to get them on the air real fast or for production and on the air or whatever. I can't remember that. That was almost a walk-in machine. And we went to school with a guy that helped us install it. And then after he left, then we had all kinds of trouble with it.
I can't remember that. I would not, I don't think I ever saw one of those machines, but yeah, some of that stuff was pretty big, and that ACR-25 was two separate cabinets. So I know what, when you're talking about big stuff, I understand. And the stuff was very heavy. I think the transport cabinet was probably, I think the transport cabinet had to weigh a good 1 ton. And then the control cabinet that had the Tektronix color monitor in it, and all the card racks for all the electronics, and the servo stuff, and power supplies, all that stuff was in the other cabinet. And one time, what a nightmare that was, when I had a failure in the power supply for the time-based director. And I spent two whole days working on that without any sleep. And that was a nightmare. K8. IR, this is WB9PA.
WB9YPA, this is K8LIR. Yeah, for about 3 or 4 years there, we went through all kinds of stuff for on the air. And I just now, I got out of the business when everything went digital. They just sent me to school for digital, and I didn't care to learn digital. And so I retired in 2007. I helped install the digital transmitter, and we didn't quite get digital tape machines in for the news department yet. And they didn't get any digital stuff until after I left. And then they had to set up all their new editing areas for the news department, and some editing stuff for the production departments. So I got out of there when everything went hard digital. I don't know if you're still working. You told me you got out of it by then. So I'm an old man. I've been around a long time. Well, you've been bringing back a lot of memories on some of that stuff that we had that I forgot, of all the stuff we had. Over.
Mission. So, okay, three, and I'll be listening.
WB9YPA, this K8LIR. I lost all that transmission. There was nothing coming down to the line. I think one of these repeaters or whatever is overheating and shutting down.
I think you said that that it was overheating and shutting down, or maybe you said it wasn't. Not sure what you said there. So, hey, I'll be listening. 73, and I really enjoyed the QSO. And talk to you again.
Okay, Mike. Good talking to you. We ought to get together again on this set up here on 220. Sometimes it works. Somewhere down the line it's overheating. So I don't know what it is. Try to get a hold of you in a week. This is K8LIR.
Okay, very good. Hey, just so you know, there is another system in that area that you might find easier to get into. And I think that's, and I'll look that up for you here real quick. That is, here is also connected and linked into this one. So let me see, I'll find that for you, Gil. Okay, Gil, if you can copy, that repeater in Grand Rapids is on 224.2. That's 224.92 megahertz, and I think the PL tone for that, if it needs it, I think is 94.8 hertz. So if you can get into that machine, you might get into that one. It might be closer to where you're at. So, just for heads up on that. Okay, 73. I'll let the cools or the coils cool in your rig. talk to you. Hopefully, talk to you real soon again. K8LIR. This is WB9 YPA, clear, and I'll be listening.
W9 YPA, what frequency again? I got 224 points, then I didn't get the other numbers.
920, yeah, 224.920, QSL.
Okay, so what I'm working now is 223.920. This is the same, this must be the one that I'm on.
Correct, yep. The one in Moline is the one that you're operating through. So you might want to give the one, the 224.920. Might want to give that one a try. It might be closer to you.
Okay, I'll see if I can find it on this unit I've got. Okay, Mike, good talking to you, 73s, and hope to see you down the line. K8LIR, clear.
73, WB9, YPA, clear.
This is W8MEL.
Hey, Mel, W8MEL. I haven't talked to you for a long time. This is WB9YPA.
Yeah, I heard you and Gil talking. I know Gil from Channel 8 when I used to call him a TV station, and we ran into each other at the Moose. He was talking to some guy about radio broadcasts, and I said, you guys hams are in broadcasting? So then I recognized him. It's been several years. But I run into Gil ever so often at either Moose or American Legion. So how you been doing?
I've been doing just fine with the typical broadcast frustrations that come along. one notably that I can report about is trying to get an encoder audio encoder and a decoder working at two different at the studio and the transmitter site. And I finally threw my hands up and I said, I can't break into this router to open up a port 3030 for the decoder at the transmitter end. And I finally said, I'm going home. And that was it. And the radio station is still off the air because there's no other way that I can think of to get the signal, to get the audio out to the transmitter site. So I finally had to call the IT guy and told him, I said, when you change passwords on this stuff, you need to let me in the loop. So he's going to take over. He's supposed to go in there and try to break into the router or with his password, and he's going to open up port 3030 so that the decoder will start working. I'm like, I'll tell you what, this stuff drives me nuts.
You know, a piece of hardware, a little bit easier, but kind of opening ports, this or that, and I don't do that stuff anymore. I'm trying to file taxes, and it keeps on playing. I got an error. I go back and they owe me money, so I need to hurry up and get this done. Yeah, the thing about getting audio up the transmitter in Big Rapids, a guy, he had an SBE certification. Anyway, he ran the audio out on telephone lines, and then he had a Radio Shack consumer equalizer out there. He went from there, then he used zip cord to get it to the transmitter. And a ham put an antenna up there, and he wanted to put in his, filter. I don't think it here is. Put a filter so he shut his transmitter off, then it wouldn't come back on the air because the fan didn't work. One guy went home, got one from his fireplace, and the guy finally got back on the air.
Yeah, I know. That's how this... I like that. When you said zip cord, I... And, you know, zip cord, as long as the circuit is balanced, you can use zip cord, but I always recommend putting several twists in it, you know, to turn it into a twisted pair. That helps get rid of some of the...
Now, the guy also recorded all the songs on cart tape, and somehow he got the wires crossed at the reverse polarity, because I came to work, and
in an emergency, that's
my car had a stereo in it, all fine, and I got inside where I worked, and we just had a mono receiver, and it lacked
something. I like hearing stories like that.
This was an
accident.
Oh, what the heck? I've come to find out. He recorded them out of phase, and he had a switch, and he'd listen to it and switch it back and forth to get the phase right.
Yeah, there you go. How about that? Yep. Yeah, whatever works. Zip cord works okay. If that's all you've got, hey, that's what you have to use. And, putting a few twists in it helps to cancel some of the RF field.
There we go, let it beep. Yeah, when I was a teenager, I built an antenna with an electronics magazine. It's out of tin foil on a piece of masonite, a bat wing antenna. I didn't have any twin leads, so I used zip cord. I brought zip cord down, and I had a UHF converter. It was supposed to be twin lead, but I didn't have twin lead. And it worked fine. Someone says the wrong impedance, but you know, 75 ohm, 300 ohm. But again, use what you got.
Yeah, yep. You know, that twin lead, you know, that stuff was pretty amazing. I thought twin lead was, it's like, you know, of course you always had to space it away from the tower or any metal and that kind of stuff. And I remember those, you know, those spacers you could buy for that. And that stuff worked pretty good. It was low loss. I mean, you could not get coax cable back then that had as good a specs and less and as low a loss as what that twin lead had.
Yeah, this is W8MEL. Famous today is whether you use a twin lead isn't common. Usually you go to when there was a Radio Shack. Twin lead's not available, but you can buy the 450 ohm or you can make your own. And that's low loss. I've got from a shack here running up, and I've got a inverted V, and it's like a 450 line, and I've got a tuner. I'm not using it right now, as I bought a new radio, and it don't have the output. All it has is 50 ohms. But yeah, that's low loss. You can make it. It's about QSTs. They show you. You can use spacers. One of these little nails that you use for Romex, you take the nails out and you can run your wires through the nails. You'll space the wires out the right spacing.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah, that would work pretty good, wouldn't it? That's actually a great idea. The other thing, yeah, now on my antenna here, I've got an HF antenna up. It's an inverted V and balanced, of course. Inverted Vs are balanced. And I run, I think it is 450 ohm open wire, not open wire, but it's, you know, they call this stuff window line. But it's a balanced line, and it's really low loss. And that's why I used it. And then at the very bottom of the tower, I've got my a high power antenna tuner, which converts unbalanced. So I use coax to get into the house with, and then I use then I convert over to balanced, and then go up that 450 ohm line. But I made spacers out of PVC pipe. It's like a yellowish colored PVC pipe, and made spacers all the way up my tower every so many feet, and then I put a twist in the transmission line, and I guess, you know, when you do a twist in there, that serves two purposes. The wind has less bucking effect on the line, and then putting a twist in it helps to eliminate extraneous noise fields. And I'm sure you're fully aware of that. But that's what I did here, and it seems to work pretty good.
Yeah, some of the ham radio, I'm looking at the radios. I bought a KC710, and I moved a couple light years from my old radio. It just amazed me. But, you know, I ask people questions like, what's a Q multiplier, a humbucking coil? These are old radio terms. And you know, like somebody asking somebody, my teenage grandson, what a dial telephone is. And somebody's old ham radio with a VFO. You know, it's all this old stuff. It's got more of a challenge. But, you know, everything changes as we go along. This is W8MEL.
I mean, some of the stuff that those guys, that the old timers came up with, was really clever. You know, like the Q multiplier. You know, to improve the selectivity of your receiver, and that stuff worked. And then, you know, now today I don't think most of these newer hams, and I'm not trying to degrade any of the younger hams. It's just a lot of them haven't heard the term like zero beat. That's not something that's on the test anymore. And like you said, Q multiplier, you won't ever find that on the newer technician or general class tests.
No, well, I got my first class license back in April of 1968. And, of course, that's gone away, but even the second class, or what they call the general class, there's a lot of information, but I started with two transistors with an add-on class. So I remember going down to the storage of batteries. They had multiple choice, and one was store the battery in a cool, dry place and kick it once a month. And all the other answers are completely wrong. And I put that down. The classmates laughed at me, and I said, but I'm the only one that passed. None of you guys passed. I'm the only guy that passed.
Wow. So that test was a mess, huh? Oh boy. You had to straighten their mess out. That's funny. W8MEL, this is WB9YPA. I just looked up to see what a FT 710 was. And, yeah, that's a high-tech rig, that's for sure.
Breaker.
Is there a breaking station in there?
Yeah, Mel, this is K-8-L-I-S.
Yeah, we've been talking about you. I used to loaf at the TV station. I never saw you do any work.
That's because I had everything done by the time he got in there.
Yeah, Dean Bass is, I think he retired, and Channel 8 took him a couple years to figure that he wasn't there anymore.
I've seen Dean Bass. We used to have a thing for dinner about every 2 weeks, but I haven't been to one of those for a year.
Well, I just gotta harass you. I went to work for the phone company. Phone company pays a whole lot better than the TV station, so I should have got into the telephone business a long time ago.
Now, I'll let you keep talking to YPA. Another engineer. This has been a pretty good afternoon.
You guys are the engineers. I'm just fooling everybody. But hey, I'm going to let you guys talk because my friend is here, and we're supposed to talk to, I'm a power of attorney for a friend of mine, and we have to talk to a tenant. So I gotta run, guys. Hey, thanks a lot, and I enjoyed the QSOs. W8MEL to get it in the group. This is WB9YPA, and I gotta run. I'll see you guys. I'm clear.
Okay, good talking to you. I'm gonna catch you again. I don't run down on the shack. I have to put a radio on the ground. I'm out there turning the boards into sawdust, so I'd rather be doing that. I'm doing tax stuff. We'll talk to you all later. So, Gil, what you doing on Valentine's Day? You gonna take yourself out to celebrate?
I gotta get together with my daughter here. After she's been with my ex.
Well, I'm thinking of Brian, because we went out last night. We're going to go to the 208. They got some kind of hootenanny going on there tonight. They're going to have Living the Dream. It's their favorite band. And then Sunday, we're members of Fish Street at Baldy's. It's his annual fish fry. So we'll go see Baldy. And then Tuesday, your friend Denny Graham's is having a gumbo party at, I don't know what the number, 247, the one down in Michigan. He's going to have a gumbo party.
Yeah, that's 459. Yeah, so I'm getting over the flu. And it's the flu that makes every bone in your body ache or muscles ache. And I'm just getting over that. And I'm about ready to get out of here tonight or tomorrow. It's my daughter's birthday today, too, on Valentine's Day, so I got to make sure I see her. I talked to her yesterday. I said, well, maybe I'll see you during the week and take you out for dinner.
Yeah, I don't know if I got something. I'm just dizzy, tired. Don't know if it's a flu or something, but or just getting old. I'll let you move on. I'm going to work on a tax. I found an error here, and they owe me money. I want to make sure I get this done. We'll talk to you later. This is WAWL.
This is K8LR. I have my son do my taxes because everything I made money on has been through Fidelity, and he's my man that's into Fidelity with a computer, and I don't have a computer, and I just made a little interest on a few things, so my taxes take about 20 minutes to do, and I'm done because he's got most of it done, and I had to pay minimum disbursement, which was a few thousand in taxes.
Well, next year, I moved a lot of stuff into Roth, and I've got some other places. Should be pretty much tax-free here, or at least low taxes. Catch you later. This is WWL.
Okay, now, yeah, that's what my son has been doing, moving all the big stuff into the Roth. That's where I pay the taxes.
CMN Network.
K8LR clear on this repeater.
MI3 Network. CMN Network. This is the CMN Network, MI3.